thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
The living.
Here's John Williams.
Here we go. Mm-mm. Happy couple days before the holidays start, or the Thanksgiving Day holiday. This is John Williams. We appreciate you tuning in. Weekdays from 1 to 3. I don't know about you, but it seems to me like this week is not a super productive week, and I'm sensing that right about now is when productivity in America just plummets, right? Like, unless you're on a line and another widget is coming down tomorrow at 8 a.m., are you really getting that much done tomorrow? Are you really getting that much done today? Thursday's Thanksgiving, and then Friday you're just wallowing around in excess. And then come Monday, you'll kind of waller back, and maybe Tuesday we kind of pick it up again. But it's a lost week.
We don't call it Monday. We call it Cyber Monday, please.
Oh, yeah, really? So maybe productivity will be down Monday. And yet, for some reason, the Chinese are kicking our butts. Huh. By the way, I just wanted to review for you the results from yesterday's Mega Monday quiz. Steve, let's see if you were paying attention. Lauren Lapka, you were kind of in on this a little bit yesterday as well. All right, so did we learn yesterday this little cake snack, a staple of brown bag lunches invented in the suburb of Schiller Park in 1930? What was that?
Twinkie.
Twinkie.
A billion of them sold by 1980 in 1 year. A billion.
I think 70,000 are still in circulation.
That's one of the foods that, you know, somebody lost 14 years ago, and it's still pretty much in its original shape in a cupboard somewhere, right? Twinkies sort of live in perpetuity. Her millionaire husband owned their namesake Palmer House Hotel, but Bertha Palmer made her name by inventing this sweet food for the Chicago World's Fair. That was Steve?
The brownie?
Affirmative. Chicago's got over 300 restaurants serving this type of sandwich, credited to whom? Al Ferrari in 1938, and that sandwich is? That's the one
beef.
That tripped up. The Italian beef, and that's the one that tripped up our guest yesterday, our Mary, who was taking our Mega Monday quiz. Gibson's, we told you, is the top-grossing restaurant in Chicago and one of the top in the United States. The number one grossing restaurant in the United States, I don't remember its name, but it's in Las Vegas, and that's just cheating. Tim Samuelson, Chicago's official cultural historian, could find no consensus on who actually invented deep-dish pizza. But if it does have to have a birthplace, most smart people say the deep-dish pizza was born here in 1943. You guys remember the name of the pizzeria?
Uno.
Did you know that was the history of it? I did not.
I did not know Uno.
I would not have guessed. I would have guessed maybe Gino's. Uno goes way back, obviously. I would not have guessed, you know, Aurelio's or Malnati's, but I didn't know that it would have been. It makes sense. Pizzeria Uno. The highest public restaurant in the United States is, and we all know that now, right?
Signature Room?
Yeah, 95th floor of the Hancock. I guess it differentiates between, actually in the Aeon building, which goes up higher, there is a restaurant on top of the Aeon building, but that's a private club. For an average American to just eat a meal as high up as possible in the United States, the Signature Room is the tallest public restaurant.
In the U.S. or Chicago?
In the United States of America. Well, there aren't many buildings a lot taller than that, and I guess it's private space when you get up that high. I've been to the Signature Room. I suppose you have, too, a few times in my life, maybe half a dozen. It's always a swell view. It's always a little disappointing. Sometimes you can't see that well, and I don't mean to knock them, but you can get just as good a food way down, way down on the ground. And for a little bit less. But it is, if I were a tourist, I don't think that would be a bad choice, eh? Sun Times editorial today was interesting. It was about e-cigarettes. And it led to what I thought was fascinating statistic. I was talking to a couple of buddies this morning at breakfast, and we were just talking about vaping, among other things. It's what the editorial in the Sun Times was about. And one of my pals just said, you know, better the kids just smoke cigarettes like we did. If I had my druthers, I would rather find out at Thanksgiving when my son or daughter came home from school that they were vaping than they were smoking. We all agree on that, right? And I wonder if you've talked to your kids or if you've recently discovered that they do. You know, a child. This is the thing. So many kids who would never smoke cigarettes vape, right? And I don't know if you are looking at it kind of the way I did, which was, all right, at least you're not smoking Camels. So better that you vape. Better that you don't do anything. But I'm wondering how much alarm is raised in your household when you discover that your kids are doing it. The Sun-Times reminds us that we are the leading state in the union for deaths by vaping. 5 of the 47. 2,300 cases of illnesses. Vitamin E acetate, they write, a compound often added to black market vaping devices laced with THC, is what causes, researchers believe, many of these deaths or illnesses. That's the thing. It's not commercially available vaping products. It's this black market stuff. So if you ban the legal stuff, the black market's going to be there anyway. Literally, if you were king, would you say, okay, let's ban all vaping products? I don't know that that's the best way to go. Sun-Times said this, the next time you hear any e-cigarette executives say the industry has never ever tried to lure young people into vaping while pushing e-cigarette flavors like bubble gum and candy, don't believe a word of it. Yeah, they're happy to have those people on board, even though they'll say otherwise. In 2015, Juul blitzed social media platforms with ads designed to make e-cigarettes seem cool and hip. Why wasn't the company marketing its products where smokers were, said the Sun-Times, like NASCAR races? That would have made sense. If you really wanted to push vaping as an alternative to tobacco, put it all over NASCAR, but they didn't do that. Why was the campaign so youthful? Meanwhile, Juuling, as it came to be called, took off, and underage teens, not just young adults, responded to the campaign and began using the product that has a higher nicotine content than a pack of cigarettes. So here's the statistic that killed me today. What percentage of high school kids today vape? Give me a number. Lauren, Steve, what would you guess? Elif, you know the answer to this one, right?
60%.
I'm going to say 18%.
Split the difference. It's 27. More than one out of four high school kids vape. I am shocked to hear that. So your niece, nephew, son, daughter, granddaughter, grandson, one in four of you, they do. Tell me what that conversation is like at your house. Hey, Rob, you're on the air. This is John Williams. What's on
your mind? Hi, I teach psychology at Judson University. And one of the things I tell my students is for traditional cigarettes, 89% of people who smoke as adults started in the teen years.
Yeah.
And so I tell my students that, you know, if teenagers, they like to smoke, they'll look adult. But smoking is not an adult behavior. It's an adult. You're like waving the flag. If you pick up a cigarette as an adolescent, you're ironically showing your immaturity, not your maturity.
And yet that doesn't work, does it?
Right, exactly.
In fact,
not if an adult tells them that.
In fact, the very fact that an adult tells them that is all the more reason that they'll do it just despite the adult.
It could be. One of the bigger risk factors is if their peers smoke.
Yeah, I just looked this up this morning. By age 18, 98% of the people, or 90% of the people who smoke will be smoking by the age of 18. Oh, by the time you're 19, you've gotten past maybe some of that peer pressure. If you're not smoking at 19, you're almost certainly not going to smoke.
Yeah, so that's why they're, I don't have stats on the vaping, but it makes sense. I mean, from a business standpoint, strictly business, that's why they would cater to the young people with bubblegum flavors and that, because that's the only way they're going to get customers.
One in 10 middle schoolers. We're talking sixth graders vape. I don't know where I've been. I haven't been raising any sixth graders lately. These statistics are shocking to me. 27% of high schoolers. I just don't understand. Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks. And by the way, Judson, I've heard of that. Where's Judson?
Elgin.
Oh, well, then that's why I've heard about it. But hello, John. Hey, thanks for the phone call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Rob, I appreciate you joining us on WGN. I've got a few minutes here, don't we, Olive? Yeah. 1 in 10 middle schoolers, 1 in 4 high school students, and yet cigarette smoking is down. The percentage of middle schoolers who smoke tobacco, 2.3%. High school students, it's now under 6%. Hooray, except You've got under 6% using tobacco, 5.8%, but you've got 27% using the Juul. And I still haven't heard from a parent who said, yeah, well, when we found out, here's what we said, or here's what we're doing about that. And I suppose the conversation is in part, well, all right, if you're going to vape, at least vape these safer products. Promise me you won't use any black market stuff. I guess that's more a conversation about do you or don't you allow your kids to smoke marijuana? How badly do you feel about that? In 20 minutes, it's going to be legal anyway. I wonder if that will have an impact, right? That if you don't have to vape THC, you can just buy edibles or loose leaf marijuana tobacco, you know, marijuana. Maybe that will help.
I saw my first roadside for, you know, they have those, the IDOT has those signs like don't read your phone while you're driving. Those, and they're always clever little sayings.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the ones up this week said something about don't be, the only thing, the only thing that should be baked this holiday is the pie. So that's kind of the first pot reference
right.
on the, one of those signs.
Yeah, because I don't think they would be referencing that were it not legal or about to be legal. And maybe they would. Maybe they've done that in the past. But it's coming. It's going to be part of our everyday conversation in reality. And I'm just wondering what that'll be like, too, when some families get together or some kids come home from college or whatever. But if I don't have the statistics for college-age kids, but if 27% of high schoolers are doing it, and maybe it's about the same for... Lauren, do you canvass your friends or notice them much? You're in your 20s. I wonder what it's like.
I'm actually
in that age.
30, but that's okay. Yeah. I appreciate the compliment.
Running around, I'll bet you run around with some 28-year-olds. Less so than that, huh?
Yeah, I'm usually the oldest of the group for sure, but usually still around 29, 30. Honestly, I never really had friends that were smokers aside from people that smoked pot, and those that do have done it for a very long time, and they never changed to vaping it, really. Maybe one. But they would get it from legal places in Colorado.
Juul is now a $38 billion a year business. No, that's its value. I don't know what it's doing in business per year, but Juul is now worth, the company, $38 billion. This wasn't even a thing 10 years ago. 75% of the e-cigarette market is Juul. So Dick Durbin, the senator from Illinois, would take all pod-based e-cigarettes like Juul off the market until the device has passed the FDA scrutiny. But I don't, this is the same conversation we've had with, who else was in here advocating for that? It was Raja Krishnamurthy, the congressman. And Raja's on that page too. I think that's got bipartisan support. And I think that's really all you can do as a legislator. I'm just not sure that's the smartest thing to do. Anecdotes, they say, are not hard evidence. Many adult smokers have said vaping helped them kick the cigarette habit. I vape now. I don't smoke tobacco. But far more independent research said the Sun-Times is called for. In the meantime, listening to the makers of e-cigarettes is just like listening to big tobacco. Yeah, I understand that. Our news click at WGNRadio.com yesterday was about the Chicago Bears. The biggest problem for the Bears is, we asked after their weekend win, they play the Lions on Thanksgiving. We said, is it the ownership, the coaching, or the players? The ownership, the coaching, or the players? As ownership, I meant not just the owners, but the president and the, anybody above Nagy.
Ryan Pace.
Ryan Pace. So, yeah, so that's not fair, right? Because I think if we'd put Ryan Pace in there, that might have actually been a viable option for some of you. But it went like this. 35% of you said the ownership, which in a way is Ryan Pace. That is, McCaskies could get rid of Ryan Pace, but they choose not to. So I would say that's at least one way to vote against him. 35% said the ownership. 45% said the coaching. And 20% said the players. When I voted for the players. That is against the players. I said the biggest problem for the Chicago Bears is the players. Because that does include the quarterback. It does include
the receivers.
The defense, which isn't playing as well as we thought we had. At the beginning of the season, remember the conversation was, this is the greatest defense since the 85 Bears. This is one of the greatest defenses in the history of the NFL. It was all of that. And I don't know the you can blame the coaching. You can blame the offense on the coaching, but I don't think you can as easily put the defense on the coaching. I know they'll come up with schemes, et cetera, but I'm not sure that that's as much on the coaching as it just is on the guys not getting the job done. 125 now. We'll come up with a new news click for you. Alto Demetrius Ivory will say hi to us on Thanksgiving travel weather. That'll be a little after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. And Christian Gebbis, I think that's how you say his name. He's the founder and CEO of Autobahn AI. It's a Chicago area company that makes that self-driving artificial intelligence in semi-trucks. I see that the First Lady and the President are on TV right now. You know, the new Christmas tree was dragged over to the White House this week and set up.
I think this is about the turkeys.
I think it is.
They're pardoning the turkeys.
Melania looked stunning. Oh, my God, did she look fabulous for the Christmas tree. Arrival. She received the tree, and they're going to decorate it up. And then you got Thanksgiving, too. Can we just play real quick, Elif? This is the reception that the First Lady got when she spoke to a Baltimore youth conference about the problems of opioids. So the First Lady of the United States comes out in front of an auditorium packed with high school kids to talk about how to be best and don't use opioids. Here is the introduction.
It is my pleasure to introduce to you the First Lady of the United States of America.
I don't know if you call that mixed or not. CNN said that for the first 60 seconds or so, she was kind of booed. And then the next cut, Elif, is as she's talking, the crowd was not paying any attention, was raucous, was disrespectful.
Thank you, Jim, for the warm introduction and for inviting me to join you today for such an important event centered on opioid.
It was like that for 5 minutes. So I wonder if they would at least give her a warm round of applause at the end. Here's the last cut, 3.
May God bless you, your families, and United States of America. Thank you.
Thank you so much, First Lady. We appreciate you.
You can score that at home any way you want. That's the reception the First Lady got.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly.
If this got on the plane next to me, I would live with that.
Was she sitting on her boyfriend's lap on the plane?
Not yet, but I think that's what it was. They're like, okay, we think we know what's going on here, and we're not going to have any of that shenanigans.
That's why we made the bathroom so much smaller.
If you can pull that off, props to you. Because
hey, I witnessed it when I went to Germany a month ago.
Really?
Yes.
Both of them emerging, or did you just notice when they both went in?
I watched them both go in and come out.
Wow, how long?
About 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with
any
of that.
They were strangers, too.
No.
Yeah. Oh. And about a 15 to 20 year age difference. I heard their whole conversation.
So there's actually an app that you can, that allows people to meet if they're traveling on the same plane or same bus together.
For that purpose?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not to exchange recipes.
Angels cheer, cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely
day. You know, it dawns on me, the thing that we didn't follow up on that conversation yesterday.
Say the words and we'll beat the...
Lauren Lapka witnessing a mile-high club rendezvous. Away. You said, I heard their whole conversation.
For a fly.
I did.
What were they talking about? You mean the setup or the aftermath or what?
The setup. So the gentleman who was 27 was sitting in between two strangers and was rather tipsy already, and was making small talk with the people on the side of him, getting to know what they did. The woman, who was 45-ish or something like that, it works in the alcohol industry. And
how old was he? Was he the older of the two?
He was 27.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so 27, she was like 45.
He hits her up, and then I wonder what the words were that...
I don't know, but they were talking very loudly. This is why I was awake to witness what happened, because they were so loud. But he convinced them to have a few drinks with him on the plane. So, you know,
were you guys in business or coach?
Coach.
Wow. I mean, you know, less privacy there. So everybody's witnessing that. And then off he and she trundle.
Yeah, it was something.
So, do you wanna? I don't have the vocabulary. I don't have the sentences to say that. I don't know how that goes, but there it was, huh?
I can't fathom that they weren't bashful at all, but apparently they were.
Yeah, no kidding. Yesterday, we also spoke about that Mary Wisniewski story in the Chicago Tribune. Did you see that? She wrote about this artificial intelligence company out of Rolling Meadows, Autobahn AI, and how they've developed software that would go in existing trucks to make them driverless. And they said yesterday, Monday, one of those trucks was on the Jane Addams Tollway. And I don't know if you went by one. It would be with the driver still in the driver's seat, but he could be hands-free, which is just terrifying to some of us. Although Steve said, you know, you use phones too. It'll come and you'll get used to it and it'll be okay. The young man that they talked about in that story was Christian Gebbis, and he's in our studio now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Congrats.
Thank you very much.
Also, you're 19 years old.
I'm 24.
I mean, I was just amazed to see that. You are the founder of this company?
Yes, I started it about 3 years ago.
With whom?
I convinced my dad to actually quit his job and start the company with me. I went to the University of Illinois at Chicago and was leading a lot of award-winning robotics competitions at NASA and DOD-funded competitions.
What did your dad used to do?
So he was in VR back in 95. Then he went to high-frequency trading here in Chicago, agricultural robotics and
VR, not VC.
VR, virtual reality.
Not venture capital. He was a VR guy. So at least he had some familiarity with technology then.
Yeah.
Was he a developer or a financer of that stuff?
No, he's a software engineer, and my parents were definitely large financers of the project on the early days, too.
Yeah. That is your project now, AI Autobahn.
Autobahn AI, yeah.
Autobahn AI. Out of Rolling Meadows. So then what do you guys do?
Yeah, so there are millions of trucks on the roads today, and they're the backbone of the American economy. The problem that we see is that these trucks are producing tremendous amounts of extra emissions due to inexperienced drivers using these vehicles in the industry. And all the trucks in the U.S., they produce the same amount of emissions as almost 130 coal plants, where there's actually only 83 in the U.S. together.
Yeah, but how does computers helping the drivers put out fewer emissions?
Yeah, so the computer learns from human drivers and essentially, by attaching our system onto a vehicle, we're collecting a lot of data from multi-directional cameras, accelerometers, GPS, to essentially provide the vehicle with greater efficiency in how it uses the fuel to throttle or to brake.
Really? So acceleration, stuff like that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So this is really more so around, why did we actually go start this? The semi-trucks actually last for a really, really long time. They last for almost 20 years. And so these inefficiencies that are coming with them in order to haul these goods, they're going to last for a lot of decades.
Do you program in the right turns instead of left turns? FedEx trucks make more right turns and left turns because that's a more efficient use of the fuel to get to the location. You're not doing that, are you?
We're focused primarily on highways because that's 80% of the miles that long-haul trucks travel.
Got it. Okay, so what does the vehicle being driverless have to do with that?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think have been circulated is one of our videos from a test track in Joliet, where there wasn't a driver in the seat. And that's actually part of our vision, a long-term vision, to make autopilot allow drivers to basically get home a lot faster and
okay,
save them time.
When I think of AI, I think of the artificial intelligence or computer, say, driving the car, and that to most of us means steering it and
correct.
Maybe braking.
Correct.
But I guess from a fuel efficiency standpoint, if something smarter than a human being was more moderately using the accelerator, then it would use less fuel.
Yeah, even assisted steering, like an electric motor that helps you turn the steering wheel, reduces fatigue and stress for the driver. So it's a pretty hard working job. It's like actually the third most dangerous job in the U.S.
Yeah, okay. But I think that what's terrifying to a lot of us is the idea that a vehicle, for whatever reason, is being driven by a computer, not a human being, whether or not a person's in the seat.
Sure. In the early days, elevators were used by doormen or elevator men, and then now if you got into an elevator and asked somebody to control that elevator, I would be a little bit worried.
That's funny. That's funny because that's the sort of nonsense that my friend Steve Bertrand was throwing at me yesterday. Every time I'd say, I don't want to be a what was the word I was using yesterday?
Well,
Steve?
You were using troglodyte, but I think you meant a Luddite.
I didn't want to be a Luddite, and then you said, well, John, technology evolves. And that's a very interesting point. There used to be elevator operators. Heck, we used to be afraid to pump our own gas. What would happen if the thing catches fire? And it hardly ever happens, right? So I guess we all adapt to sort of the interaction with technology in our lives.
Absolutely.
But this one's terrifying, too. Yeah. People my age, and maybe a little younger, too.
We're using technologies that have made a lot of progress in, for example, Silicon Valley or other parts of the world, and essentially packaging them now in a way that truly changes the work of many American citizens.
Is it your hope that they will be driverless trucks, or do you want a driver in the truck?
This is a system that is meant to help and make the job easier for a driver. What we're working long-term towards is that the truck eventually, that's the future is automation, right? And it's going to take a really long time to get there. I actually have a CDL myself. I've done deliveries. I've driven our trucks before. And there's a human that's going to need to be involved for a while.
How long?
Existing trucks last for 20 years.
How long before we have driverless trucks?
You might start seeing them in very small deployments within the next 5 to 6 years without a driver, but on very constrained routes.
Is that what they're doing from Dallas to Phoenix or someplace in the Southwest?
Yeah.
You've got freight going that way.
Yep. Yeah, they're all operating with a driver.
They have a driver in.
Yeah, yeah. Every single company right now has a driver behind the wheel, and calling it driverless is I think the wrong thing.
I guess that's the art of the phrase, right? You get to call it that because maybe that truck could have made it without a human being, but they do have human beings in there.
Yeah.
It's 143-312-981-7200. Your question, your comment, 312-981-7200. Jump into this conversation on WGN. So right now we're talking about artificial intelligence. Autobahn AI, a Rolling Meadows company, was featured in the Tribune the other day. Christian Gebbes is the founder and CEO of that company. He's a young man with a vision to the future, and his family's in this business. There was, yesterday a truck on the Jane Addams?
Yeah. We started testing very actively with our truck and our autopilot system.
Always a person in the...
Yeah, absolutely.
How did that go, by the way? Did the thing crash and burn?
No, absolutely not. No,
really?
No,
went
no.
off a ramp and just fell 50 feet?
No. We always have a safety driver. As a matter of fact, we had two. Always monitoring, an engineer monitoring the data and stuff like that.
And did it go well? Did they have to take over the wheel and correct anything?
Yeah, we are collecting tremendous amounts of data from any corrections that do need to be made, and then those are like self-improving components to the system. So
okay, but say what percentage of the time did the human being have to override the computer while it was taking the test drive yesterday?
So since it just happened yesterday, I don't have the exact statistic, but it was more than half the time. We were basically testing in very high dense merging sections so that our system can learn to handle those better.
So was that surprising to you? Did you think it would be able to do it 100% of the time, or did you think about half of the time the truck will manage on its own?
Yeah, no, we explicitly told the driver to do certain instructions, right? So in certain events where we know our AI is showing maybe a lower performance, in those sections we want to handle those very safely, and collecting the data is more important than actually engaging the vehicle.
So what you found out yesterday wasn't disappointing to you?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Because I'm sorry, are you saying that 50% of the time the truck was not able to manage on its own?
It's not that it was not able to manage on its own. It's that we purposely say we're either turning it off or collecting the data as how's the human driving the situation.
Well, then what grade do you give yesterday's experiment?
Yeah, from our perspective, we achieved all our goals so far, and we're going to be doing this pretty much every day.
And then who would you ultimately sell this to?
Yeah, we're hoping that this product, we can make this product available to every single truck, every single fleet out in the U.S. For very low cost. As a matter of fact, we have a very unique type business model that might actually even allow them to have no upfront cost.
No upfront cost because they're not having to buy new trucks. They're just having to retrofit your software into... you must have some mechanism you install in the vehicle.
Yeah, right? Most trucks come with a wind visor, which is really more so an aesthetic component. We have a replacement wind visor that has 7 multi-directional cameras, and it's literally a 15-minute install. You take the visor off the truck that's above the windshield. You take that one off, you put ours on, and then you need an electric steering motor and a braking motor.
Oh, that's what I'm wondering. How does that panel of instruments on the wind visor talk to the accelerator, the brake, and the steering wheel, or the gearbox for that matter.
Yeah, there's a standardized communication protocol that is widely used by all semi-trucks, and that's how we control the vehicle.
312-981-7200. Huh, all our lines are busy. We'll start with Vicki. You're on WGN. Vicki, what can we do for you? Hi.
Hi, I'm a truck driver, and I drive in and out of the Chicago area and whatnot. My question is that truck going to be able to back up and make delivery? And how much, they're saying it's not going to cost much to add to the truck's existing cost, but what is it going to do to the warranties of the existing trucks to all the fleets out there?
A lot of questions there, but pretty good ones, too.
Sure. So backing up already is just a very, very difficult thing for even human drivers right now. And so we're equipping the vehicles with a fair amount of sensors that will be able to process the information around the environment almost 30 times faster or more than a human. And ultimately, as we collect data from how humans are backing up, we can then teach the AI on the best performing components of the data.
I wonder, though, at the end of the day, someone's still got to unload the freight.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And
right.
A truck driver usually has some, I don't know, do you have a hand in that when you do that, Vicki?
Some do and some don't, but yes.
I mean, what about that? I mean, you know, you understand where Vicky's coming from.
Absolutely.
I don't want Vicki to lose her job. I want Vicki to be a viable employee.
We do, too. Absolutely.
You do?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It sounds to me like your technology would ultimately replace the Vicky's of the world.
I think that time will be 10 to 15 years from now. I mean, right now we are focused on making the job for existing truck drivers much easier, much safer, and more efficient. So
because it's going to help her steer, it's going to moderate her acceleration, save fuel.
Yeah, so inexperienced drivers, essentially drivers with less than 5 years of experience, they actually use almost 15% more fuel, and they're 41% more likely to be in an accident.
Pardon me, finish that thought.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's a real big reason for why a system like ours needs to be built, because these trucks last for 20 years. So trucks, you know, there's about 200,000 new trucks being produced every year. They're going to last, you know, till 2035, 2040, and having no form of advanced technology is quite frightening to me personally.
815 said, "Hey John, commercial airlines all fly using autoflight. Haven't heard of very many crashes on autopilot, so why are you so afraid of this?" Some people are skeptical. How does the AI shift gears, says 630.
Yeah, so we're primarily focusing right now on automated transmissions. Those are becoming more popular because of the growing shortage in the industry. Fleets are purchasing vehicles that their drivers can actually operate.
Okay, but if I have a clutch, then you don't have the technology for that. It would be more for automatic transmission.
The technology can still be used, but it just won't have... There will be certain limitations to how.
Maybe this person likes your chances. 309 says, "What's the stock name of this company? Are you publicly traded?"
We are not publicly traded, at least yet.
Pete, you're on WGN. What's your question, Pete? You're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering how the insurance industry views this and where the liability would fall if, you know, a truck failed, you know, due to error. And then a little nugget here on the second part is this done with local software within the truck, or is this control coming through the internet, you know, from the cloud, and then is it hackable?
Let's do the first question first. Insurance industry.
Yeah. So with the autopilot technology, the main focus is to make sure the truck is centered in the lane and it's keeping a much safer following distance. And so we've been talking with many insurance underwriters with a very positive insight where we're seeing that insurance premiums could drop by 40 to even 50% with a system like ours.
Okay, but this is nascent right now, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's not commercially available to everybody,
right.
But you are under the impression State Farm is going to make it 40% less with
right.
this technology.
Right. If you use our technology, there would be an insurance incentive with it.
And then what about liability?
Yeah, and so the liability for a company that's developing software to drive the truck, you can think about it in the same fashion that of like how Tesla vehicles are being used right now. The driver is always required to be at control and attentive, and that's the same way you can view our system. Right now, the system is meant to augment and help the driver, but the driver's still the one that makes the final decision.
So you're not going to get sued.
No.
You've got an attorney on that, right?
Yes.
Thanks for the call, Vicki. Thanks for the call, Pete. Hey, producer Aleph. Aleph, who's the next call? You said line Gordon. Thanks for the call, Pete. Gordon, you're on WGN. What's your question or comment? Hi, Gordon.
Hello. He said the driver could get home quicker. How can the driver get home quicker when he's only allowed to drive so many hours a day in the time frame?
Yeah, so that is currently something that's something that we're working towards as part of our vision, is to give that time back to drivers in a way that if you go from Chicago to Denver right now, it's a 15-hour drive, but obviously truck drivers can only drive 11 hours. So if you could, in the middle of Nebraska, where it's just straight road for almost the entire state, engage autopilot for it to stay in your lane, and even have a remote operator on Autobahn's team monitoring the vehicle's performance in case there's any emergency, that would allow you to make that trip much faster. And essentially, that's what we're working towards.
Wait a minute. How does that make it faster?
You can get home faster because you can do that trip in, say, 15 hours as opposed to 26.
Am I going to save... I'm sorry. If it's a 15-hour drive from here to Denver,
yeah.
How does autopilot make that trip any quicker?
Not currently. It doesn't currently do that. But
how could it in theory? Is it going to go faster?
Yeah. So the regulations will need to get passed for something like this. For any form of operation where the driver is not in the seat, regulations will need to get passed for that.
Are you imagining a scenario where going through Colorado, the guy's sleeping?
Yeah, we definitely do. It's
so wait a minute. This semi between here and Colorado is doing 80 miles an hour.
And more like 60, or if it's in autopilot, you can even do half the speed, but get there in a faster time than if you were to sleep on the road.
You don't have to pull over. So we're going to now dial it down to 45 or whatever the minimum is,
yep.
Put it on autopilot, and the guy's going to crawl in the back, and he's going to sleep for 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Autobahn, we will be able to provide a service that can actually remotely monitor. I think one of the other questions was where does the software actually run? It actually all runs locally on the truck, but we do have the ability to very securely remotely log in and pull that vehicle over to emergency lane.
Christian Gebbes, founder and CEO of Autobahn AI out of Rolling Meadows. We're out of time. Come in and join us again. Keep us posted on how your technology and company are doing.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
When you do that IPO, let us know, okay?
Will do. Awesome.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
207 now on WGN. Hi, it's John Williams. Remember, on Facebook, I'm WGN King John. We always post our daily web poll question. We call it a news click there. Attention, advertisers, you should sponsor the news clip. Contact WGN Radio Sales today. The biggest problem for the Chicago Bears is ownership, coaching, or players was yesterday's news clip. 35% of you said ownership. 45% of you said coaching. 20%, including me, said the players. The end of the day. By the way, I think our new news click will be about bread and butter being pardoned by the first family, by the president and the first lady. A, I love this wacky, silly tradition. B, this is ridiculous. I don't know if there's a C in there.
C, all of the above.
You know, that is true, Lauren.
Because that is exactly how I feel.
This is a ridiculous tradition that I kind of like.
But I love it.
Maybe for the first time ever, we'll just have one option on the news click. This is a ridiculous tradition that should be ended, and I love it. Demetrius Ivory, how will you vote on that if that was our news click question?
The turkeys, kind of weird. Starting to get weird, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just an opportunity for something to go wrong. Like, if any of us, if a TV weatherman, if a radio announcers were doing it and it's a public spectacle, it's just something could go wrong at any minute.
I agree. It's just,
do we set ourselves up for trouble?
What are they? Animals and children.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I've learned that lesson every time that I've tried to put one of them on television.
Demetrius Ivory over Channel 9, WGN-TV, is on the line to answer some questions about the weather. But that's the beauty of what we do, Demetrius. If it goes badly, at least we don't suffer the... I'll say humiliation of being on television, you know, visual. But that's not so true anymore. You can watch us on the stream right now, and for a couple of hours a day, we're all on CLTV here, so we're a little bit in that world ourselves.
Now, do you guys have to, you know, once that started, do you say, well, I better iron my shirt today, or...
I have not noticed any discernible improvement in the appearance of the staff since we began simulcasting online and on CLTV.
My mother
recently discovering that when I move to my new shift next Monday, December 2nd, I'll be doing 9 a.m. to noon. So the 9 to 10 o'clock hour, where Steve Cochran is now, is where I'm going to be. I will be on CLTV. And my mother looked at me as I was telling her this, and I could see her sort of surveying the clothes I was wearing. Like, Johnny, I'm not sure that's ready for prime time yet.
That is a huge time. So be ready. I mean, you may need to Black Friday it up.
Do you people at Channel 9, at WGN-TV, do you guys get a stipend for your clothes?
No. You know what? I did in my older, I believe my first TV, second TV job, I did. And not a very good experience with it. It was when you get your taxes at the end of the year, they tax it as if it's cash.
Right. So if we give you a $500 allowance this month or $100 allowance this month, it's actually costing you 25-30% of that. It's not free money, in other words.
No, it's not free money. I could, you know, back then, I could only spend it at a certain store. So as far as the retail price or as far as what it costs the store, who knows? But for me, it was cash.
Yeah,
so I was like, man, no.
I'll take care of this on my own.
Yeah, I'll take care of this on my own.
I'll run to the rack and get something less expensive. Okay, so this big storm out west, tell me what its status is.
Well, so I'm a little bit torn by this one because I'm really excited. I love a good winter-like storm. There's just so much to get from a storm like this, or to kind of just to kind of examine about it. The thing is, it's going to be impactful to us in terms of winds. The snow, and that's my big headline today, is not going to hit the Chicago area. We may see a little mix of rain and snow tomorrow, later in the morning, but that's about it. The big, heavy, crippling snow is not going to hit the Chicago area.
Okay, that's the headline for us. What about, though, people who are traveling west or are coming from that direction? What's its path?
Well, we've already seen Denver's airport has already canceled a lot of flights. Denver is looking at a pretty good punch. Minneapolis, that area, looking at a pretty good punch also, and also into Portland. Fortunately, you know, the major hub airports, and when I say major hubs, I'm thinking of places, you know, where, you know, you're talking like Newark, New Jersey, New York area, Atlanta, Dallas, you know, where a lot of the connecting flights are not going to get hit very hard. We are probably going to have numerous delays because of winds, 60-mile-per-hour winds gusts tomorrow. So, you know, with that, it's going to be hard getting planes in and out. So we may be looking at a lot of delays. And, it honestly may start with Chicago because other airports, major airports, aren't really getting hit that hard.
So wait a minute. Tell me about tomorrow. Some precipitation and 60-mile-an-hour winds?
Yes, sir. So we're expecting to see showers come our way shortly tonight. And then tonight, because, like I said, this is a big, strong, multifaceted system, it's going to bring us thunderstorms later tonight, probably after midnight. And then tomorrow what will happen is it's really going to be a tight system as it moves through. It's going to lose its moisture, but the cold air will surge behind it. So tomorrow morning, let's say early in the morning, say maybe 5, 6 in the morning, we'll see temperatures in the low 50s potentially, maybe even mid-50s. But then during the day, temperatures will fall down into the 30s. And with an air mass change like that, you're going to pick up some strong winds in this case. So we'll see winds gusting to around 60 miles per hour with high wind warnings in effect for the whole region at least through 6 p.m. tomorrow, some until 8 p.m. tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the precipitation, you think, won't accompany that?
No, I think the rain will be generally tonight. The thunderstorms will be late tonight, and then early tomorrow morning the rain should scoot off to the east. If it lags a little bit, we may make a quick change over to some rain snow mix, but I don't think very much, and I don't think it sticks at all, as a matter of fact, as the moisture gets out of here. So it's just going tomorrow a very windy, generally dry and cooler day. Very cold, I think, by the afternoon.
Yeah, wind chills, I suppose, huh?
Oh, they get hard to calculate when you're talking about, you know, winds sustained at between 30 and 35 miles per hour. But if you get temperatures that are going to be sitting in those low 30s by the late afternoon, you're talking a 30, 35 mile per hour wind gust. I mean, just off the top of the head, I'd say that probably puts you in the teens as far as wind chills.
So if I was traveling east, was this going to follow me?
Yes, this is going to affect you. I'm glad you asked that question because I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, where I thought it snowed every day from Halloween to Easter. So if you're traveling east, you're fine until you get to Cleveland. Then there's going to be some lake effect snow along the lake shore there. It could go, it's lake effect. Go figure how much they're going to get. I mean, it could be 6 inches plus.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Western suburbs there, you're probably going to be okay. You'll be looking at that snow all the way through Pittsburgh. And then if you're traveling east. So once you go about 5-6 hours east, you're going to run back into the snow.
What about if I'm south of this? Because you described it as Portland, Oregon, I presume, Denver, Minneapolis. Chicago gets windy, but how about St. Louis, Indianapolis heading there? Will you be south of the band?
Yes, you'll be south of the band. They're looking at rain today, but still mild temperatures. And they won't be looking at the snow coming their way really at all down in St. Louis. So if you travel south, you're okay. I think the band of snow is going to be kind of Des Moines right through Minneapolis and northern Wisconsin and UP, Michigan. It's going to kind of follow that trek. So going south, winds will still be an issue. Rain is going to slow you down, but you're certainly better off than if you're traveling. The worst thing that you can do is say, I'm going to head to Minneapolis for Thanksgiving because because if you haven't left already, it's going to be a tough drive.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Some of you are calling already with questions or comments. Hurry up if you have a question or comment for Demetrius Ivory over at WGN-TV. Karen's got one. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi, John. How are you today?
Good. Where are you heading?
I've got a child driving from La Crosse, Wisconsin, over to Milwaukee to get her brother, and then they're coming down to Wheaton. How does that look, and what's the best time frame to do that?
When are they traveling?
I think she's going to go tomorrow.
Tomorrow what time?
In the morning.
Okay, so tomorrow morning, so she may be looking at some snow in the early portion of the day for the beginning part of the trip. But for right now, and this is really splitting hairs, but right now I have that the snow is going to be generally north of Madison.
Okay.
But that is splitting hairs. I mean, you know, 10, 20 miles east or west, and it's going to really...
What about the wind?
Well, the winds will be... they'll be ferocious. It's going to be, you know, hopefully she's not driving an 18-wheeler. It's going to be two hands on the wheel. It's some powerful winds. I mean, I don't think it's something that you can't drive through. It'll be interesting because it'll probably be coming across, like coming from hitting her passenger side window.
Right. Yeah.
So that's not, you know, that's something that you have to pay attention to. But sometimes, you know, depending upon what you drive, I mean, yeah, sometimes it's winds coming straight or worse, or, you know, if you drive a bigger truck. But I don't think that she's going to have a big problem.
But then how about from Milwaukee down?
From Milwaukee down, it looks like smooth sailing, actually. I mean, maybe some rain. I would tell her she's better off leaving later in the day when the rain and snow get out of here.
Okay, but right, I understand that. Pick your poison here, but then the wind coming from Milwaukee south to Chicago will be on her broadside. That's scary for so folks, and you're going to have gusty winds up to 60 miles an hour when she's traveling down.
Right. Well, the thing is, the morning winds are still going to be picking up. They'll probably be 30 to 40 miles per hour gusts up to there, and then by afternoon, late afternoon, probably getting up to 40 or 50 or even up to 60. So the issue is, I think that if it's snowing, it's going to be really hard to do it. So
Wait and let that precipitation go through is your advice.
Unless when she's ready to go, it's not raining, it's not snowing, check the radar. If it's smooth, go.
All right. I hope that helps, Karen.
She can do it. She can do it.
She can do it. The kids know they can. It's the parents that worry. Hey, John, how about flying in from Oklahoma? I presume OKC. So if they're coming in from Oklahoma City, are they going to be south of that? It might be bumpy, but if their flight's going to go, it sounds like they won't be running into the precipitation.
Yeah, I don't see any problems. I don't know exactly how our local airports are going to handle these winds, but I don't see any problems as far as they're completely fine. I mean, maybe a thunderstorm down there today, but that's about it. I think he's fine.
All right, and then one last thing, and I'll let you go. New York on Friday.
Wow. Well, there you go. So anyone going to New York on Friday, you are going to basically visit the storm that comes through here. Kind of a mixture of other storms, but very windy there. Probably, you know, I don't, maybe not 50 or 60 mile per hour wind gusts, but they will certainly be looking at some winds that are going to come their way. They're also going to be looking at maybe a little bit of a mix. I don't think anything, again, crippling, but there's already some talk potentially about delaying or postponing or maybe even canceling
Macy's the parade. Day.
Yeah. So, but end of Friday, I think you're looking at drier conditions. The storm's going to be offshore. But it is going to be windy. I mean, I'm just looking at the isobars, and they're packed together really close. So I would certainly suspect some strong winds. I don't really know the intensity. And it's going to be cold, really cold there.
I heard that for the first time in many, many years, the balloons may not fly for the Thanksgiving Day parade in New York. Better weather in Chicago on Thanksgiving Day. Better weather here, right?
Much better. We're looking at a high temperature around 40 with the sun and clouds. So it'll be cooler, and it will be chilly because, you know, tomorrow we start the day off in the 50s.
Hey, sun and clouds and... sun and clouds in 40s on Thanksgiving Day in Chicago.
Well, we'll take it, right?
I'll take that. And will the wind have subsided by then?
Yes, the winds will diminish with each hour there. So I have about 20 to 25 to 30 mile per hour wind gusts early in the day, but later in the day they diminish in a big way. So, right. You know.
Yeah, I know you got to run, Demetrius, but it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Have a great holiday if I don't talk to you between now and after the first of the year, and thanks for your help today.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure being on. And you know what? I got a feeling weather-wise, we'll be talking again real soon.
Well, that's just great news, Demetrius.
See you at 9 a.m.
Yeah, no kidding. Demetrius Ivory over at WGN-TV joining us there. Audra Wilson's on a phone line. She's a dietitian at the Northwestern Medicine Metabolic and Health and Surgical Weight Loss Center. Audra, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I kind of got lost in the introduction of you. What do you do for a living again?
I work with patients that are trying to lose some weight through medication, diet and lifestyle changes, or through surgery.
Isn't that something most people can do, surgery notwithstanding, that is, exercise and eat right? Why would somebody go to a doctor for that?
Well, there are certain conditions that would affect your metabolism, and there's also the advent of medications to help with weight loss. There's different types of medications that do different types of things. And as a dietitian, I work with you on that diet and lifestyle side pretty much exclusively to help you to make those changes to get to your goal of weight loss or more positive health outcomes.
I don't want to dwell on that, but what are some of the medications you're talking about?
I am not the expert, but there are different types of medications that can help with appetite control. They can help with your mood and cravings. There's been a lot of development in the past, I would say, 10 years on figuring out why people crave the foods that they do and finding those pathways to help to control those cravings and that sort of thing.
I was looking at a list that you all put out. I presume that you were behind this. It says, here's some sort of ways to make Thanksgiving dinner a healthier one. And I thought all of these, and to be honest with you, I think my wife, who cooks 99.7% of our meals anyway, I think Brenda does a lot of this anyway. Can we just walk through this list real quick?
Absolutely.
Use Greek yogurt instead of sour cream. So for my baked potato or whatever, huh?
Right. Yes, it's a way to save, especially if you use the fat-free or even the 2% fat, it's a way to save bad calories and also increase the protein, which makes you feel fuller when you're eating something like a potato, which is really mostly carbohydrate, and you really save a lot of calories there.
When I get hungry now, like snacking maybe after dinner or something, I'm trying to eat more nuts because my understanding is something like a nut, which is that's right, has more proteins in it, is actually better than a carbohydrate snack. Is that right?
Yes, it's a balance. I think the thing with nuts, they have quite a bit more fat than they do protein, so they're calorie dense, we would say. So you would eat a small amount of those in a serving, or the calories can really add up. So you just want to watch your portion. Oh. But as far as satiety and fullness, nuts are going to be better than carbohydrates. That fat and protein is going to take a longer time to digest, which means you feel fuller for longer.
Use olive or canola oil instead of butter. Are you talking about cooking, or are you talking about as a, you know, garnish, as putting it on the food?
I think both or either one. Sometimes we use butter for sautéing, where we could use olive oil or canola oil. It's the goal of reducing saturated fat. They're similar in calories. The, you know, plant oils and butter are dairy sources of fat, but we're reducing those saturated fat calories, and that's important for our heart health.
Mm. Buttermilk instead of cream. Use buttermilk instead of cream. I thought buttermilk was bad for you, too.
It sounds like it from the name, because it's buttermilk, but it actually is pretty low in calories, especially compared to a full-fat cream, and it has the addition of a little bit of a tangy taste, so you could definitely use that in dressings or in mashed potatoes instead of cream to give it a little flavor with less fat and then the creaminess as well.
Double the vegetables in a recipe. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I don't know if everybody's already thought of that, but, you know, some of these are simple, but son of a gun, that's, I don't know what the recipe is that requires vegetables, but maybe, what is it, like a vegetable or a bean casserole, like a green bean casserole or spinach casserole, maybe put more of the green in there and less of the other stuff then.
Right, exactly. And if you were making a, you know, stir-fry type dish or something with pasta and vegetables and meat, you can just half the noodles or the rice and double your vegetables. You still will get that flavor, that carbohydrate that you're craving, but just reduce the calories and increase some bulk, which can increase fullness again with that fiber as well from the vegetables.
Use flavorful cheeses like Parmesan and feta. You'll use less cheese because of the big flavor. So you'd probably prefer we not use much cheese at all, but if we're going to, try something with a little more tang, in other words, huh?
Right, and I would never say don't use cheese, because cheese is really a special food. But yes, the Parmesan and feta, you won't need as much to give it the flavor, whereas something like mozzarella or mild cheddar is not very flavorful, so we tend to put more of those, more amount in to get the flavor that we would just from those. Less of the flavorful cheeses.
Yeah. Use fresh and dried herbs and spices instead of salt. But that's a tough order for some people, but obviously a good idea.
Right. I think, you know, sometimes we're a little bit afraid of the different spices because we haven't used them before. So give it a try. Think of the dishes that you, you know, already like when you go out to eat and sort of look those up and see kind of what spices are used and try to incorporate some of that into your own cooking. You can get a lot of flavor from herbs and spices, especially combining fresh and dried herbs and spices.
I'm out of time, but it says here, try ground turkey, chicken, or tofu crumbles in place of beef and cook the carbohydrate components of the dish separately so that serving size can be manipulated. What, like the stuffing on the side or something like that?
Right, yes. Put that on the side so you can decide how much you want to eat of those foods, and people can limit or have more if they want to, and not everybody has to do the same thing, so give everybody the opportunity to have what they want.
I think these are all really smart ideas. I'm going to ask producer Elif to post them on my Facebook page, too, WGN King John Audra Wilson over at Northwestern Medicine. Hey, Audra, thanks for your time. This is very helpful today.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for your time. It's time that folks are talking a lot about food, right? But with Thanksgiving around the corner and all. A University of Miami student, a Miami University, I think that's the same place. No, I don't think it is. A Miami University student posted this on Twitter this week. Please quote tweet this with your most controversial food opinion. I love controversial food opinions. John Becker put that out there. And I saw that go out this weekend. Eric Zorn pointed it out to me offline as well. And the whole damn world paid attention to that. This is what's amazing about Twitter. It's also what can be awful about Twitter, right? Because the headline in the Washington Post today, USA Today, Today, Today also has an article about it, is a Twitter thread about controversial food opinions started off harmless. That didn't last long, said the Washington Post. Because after this John Becker guy says, send me your controversial food opinion, right? And people did. then people started to bicker and call each other racist and horrible things. They trashed beets, says the Washington Post, and mayonnaise. So many mayonnaise haters, various styles of pizza, pineapples on pizza. No rice has ever been good, said Jim Belushi. You'll never change my mind, he wrote. But the poll predictably devolved. The controversy really reached a boil when Tom Nichols, a professor and author who is a prominent conservative critic of President Trump, that has no bearing on this, it seems, still replied to the prompt, Indian food is terrible, and we pretend it isn't. Personally, I just think that's kind of hilarious. It's like taking the idea of food way too seriously, but isn't that what you're looking for? He said, send me your controversial food idea. So, of course, you want to get outraged. That's the fun of the thing. He said that, and then Padma, the food judge on TV and critic and chef, said, do you not have taste buds? Others called his response racist. Somebody else said, there is nothing called Indian food. We have 22 major languages in India, each in different parts of the country, and each have their unique culture and with that food. Unless you've tasted all of them, this is not a controversial opinion. This is an uneducated one, and other people posted it and said this is an example of white racism. Somebody said they don't like Chinese food. It's boring, gloppy, oversalted, and utterly forgettable, and people called that a racist remark as well. John Becker's on a phone. John, see what you started? Welcome to Chicago and WGN Radio.
Thank you for having me, John.
Are you well known on Twitter, or is this just an anonymous person blowing up?
I am somewhat well known in the community of people who talk about baseball. I was not well known in every single community until I posted that tweet about 5 days ago, and now it has just blown up.
My producer reminds me you are the Miami U baseball student manager, huh?
Correct.
Is that which Miami are we talking about here? Is this
that is the one in Ohio?
Ah, Miami of Ohio. Well, okay, wonderful school, good school,
great school. Yeah, I love it here.
So, how many Twitter followers do you have?
I have about 3,900 right now. I had 2,000 before I sent the tweet.
So this doubled in a couple of days, your Twitter following, just because of this. What inspired you? I mean, it's brilliant. Everybody eats food. Everybody loves a controversy. So you just melded the two. But what gave you the idea to put that out there to begin with?
You know, I love food. And as much as I love food, I love talking about food and hearing about food. So I was just bored one day and said, you know, let's see what everyone else has to say. And I thought I'd get a few dozen responses from people who already follow me, and it just blew up. It's absolutely insane.
Joel Stein, the Darty columnist from Time magazine and author, he's no longer at Time, but he comes on our show often enough. He has a new book out, in fact, and I see Joel Stein responded, no chicken tastes good enough to justify killing it, to which a person named No Ha responded with three pictures of drumsticks and said, here's why you're wrong. This is fun. We're having fun now, aren't we, John?
Yeah, you know, that's what it's for. It was supposed to just foster fun discussion and not really lead to anything bigger than that. It's kind of unfortunate to me that it led to some, you know, accusations being thrown around. But, you know, I think that 99% of the tweets out there are just harmless fun, and I'm really glad that a lot of people enjoyed it. I had people that didn't follow me and tell me that they were so glad that I posted it because it just took their mind off of the work week and all that, and I'm really glad that it put a smile on a lot of people's faces.
Chris at Madison CMT wrote, the bad rap that Brussels sprouts had up until recently was totally deserved. They suck. Their recent acceptance and popularity is the work of the deep state. I love that. That's just, isn't that a great tweet? Don't you love, do you like that one, John?
Yeah, it's the funny one. You know, after about 200 times of reading bacon is overrated, I didn't need to see it again. But the ones that are just so creative and funny and out there just really gave me a laugh. And as I was just going through all the notifications I was getting, some of them were just so funny.
And, you know, some of them are tit for tat and get mean-spirited and off-topic. But I do like the ones that do respond to each other. For instance, Robbie said tomatoes should never be eaten raw, to which Astrius said, I eat them raw with salt like one might eat a heart. And just the image of the two of them kind of jives, you know. I'm like, oh my God, that is how I would eat a heart. Ew.
Yeah, you know, it's awesome, and just people being lighthearted about it. You know, obviously, difference in food opinions are not going to lead to any hurt feelings. So just people discussing it and saying, oh, if you don't like this, you have to try it this way, and maybe you just haven't had it at a good place, and I'll send you a recipe. It's just really awesome to see people from across the country and around the world just kind of coming together, bantering over food that they love and don't love and hate.
Famous and non-famous people alike, and yet as the father of this, did you feel bad as you saw your children start to fight in some of the worst ways? I mean, really, think about that. You launched this little ship, and it had some rough seas out there. How did you feel when you saw it devolve that way?
Yeah, I mean, people were going to respond to the tweet however they were going to respond, and people were going to respond to those responses however they were going to. At that point, I take ownership of the tweet the whole way through, of course, but I'm not going to take ownership of how people decide to talk about it and what people accuse each other of being. And while I wouldn't like it to come into that level of seriousness, it is what it is, and I just hope that people can at least see where people they're arguing with are coming from.
Michael said, Thanksgiving dinner food is so overrated. The only food served that's any good at Thanksgiving is mashed potatoes. That's why we eat them year-round. Carolyn said, rice is underappreciated. My husband and I both adore rice, and we eat it several times a week. We're both still slim and in our late 50s. I believe there's a connection, to which Soraya Jackson said, oh, there's no connection. I eat rice thrice a week, and I'm fat as a house. Well put, ladies. This one I thought was inspired. Shaped Reese's is, and Reese's peanut butter cups. Shaped Reese's are the best of all Reese's. The trees, the hearts. I saw a commercial last night on TV for the Christmas tree-shaped Reese's peanut butter cups, and I thought, I want one of those. I completely agree with that food opinion.
And there was a response to that one that said that one of their coworkers did a study of what percentage of what which Reese's shapes had the greatest percentage of peanut butter. So clearly there's a level of science behind these opinions also.
Adam wrote, lettuce serves no purpose. We just use it because no one's brave enough to stop. Francis wrote, Commonwealth countries need to learn that every food isn't made better by adding raisins. Chick Jacobs said, ranch dressing serves no culinary purpose except to drown any bugs that might linger on salad or dipping vegetables. Oh, come on. I love ranch. I don't eat ranch dressing that often. Not sure it's good for me, but I love ranch. Don't you love ranch, John?
Yeah, and I think most people do, and I think, you know, the point of asking for controversy is that most people would disagree. But in general, food is a pretty benign topic that no one's going to get super angry over if someone disagrees with them, and ultimately it was just about fostering discussion, getting people distracted from their regular weeks, and just having fun.
A blue check mark, Jenna Lane, ESPN, Thin Mints are trash. Perfect. Hey, this is fun, John. I'm going to ask my audience for some of their own controversial food thoughts now, but I'll let you go. Congratulations on
thank you.
Maybe not your 15th minute of fame. I think we're going to hear more from you in the future, but thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
University of Miami University of Ohio student, John Becker. Yeah, that's fun. This is WGN 244. My number is 312-981-7200. Did we miss your controversial food thought? CNN headline, people in the path of the bomb cyclone are being told to avoid travel as brutal weather hits just in time for Thanksgiving. Don't you hate that? You sit there and you go, okay, we'll have the kids come over. We'll head out to grandma's for Thanksgiving this year. Just as long as the weather's not bad, this will be no problem. It'll be fun. And then the weather is the worst possible version of it. the very time you want to travel. You could have bet that that's the way it's going to go. Doggone it. What are you going to do? Now the kids want to come home from school, or you want to head out somewhere, and you hate to make the decision like some mamby-pamby. Well, it's going to be pretty rainy and windy, so we better not travel. But damn it, that makes life difficult. Demetrius Ivory said winds up to 60 miles an hour tomorrow. And if you're heading north to south, say from Milwaukee or coming up from St. Louis, you're going to run right into the broadside of that. And then he said around the lakes, Cleveland, that's where he's from, 5 hours, 4 hours to our east, they're going to get more snow too. We're going to be spared it in the Chicago area. But if you go east, you're going to catch up with it if you go far enough east. And if you're going west, forget about it. If you're going south, you're okay. St. Louis, Indianapolis, you'll be south of the worst of this. If you're going up to north of Madison, and Lordy knows the Twin Cities, and it's just going to be a tough go for you for the next couple days. What are you thinking about? Look like you're about ready to jump in there.
I was going to sneeze. But I agree. I think we're lucky, but I'm not excited about the wind. But
I'm kind of fascinated by 60-mile-an-hour winds coming through. I mean, if I had to put up with snow and sleet or 50, 60-mile-an-hour gusts, I think I'll take the wind gusts. Of course, I'm not in an airplane. Don't you hate that? You check the weather where you're going, and you see it's going to be like that. And you know that the planes can make it, but it's just not going to be pleasant for anybody. I lived near the airport in Minneapolis twice. I lived there on two separate occasions for a total of about 8 or 9 years. And at one point, I was close enough. This is the truth. Not only was the landing gear down, we could see the faces of the passengers as they went over our head. You would pause on the phone when a plane cleared because it was just so loud. We were in the flight path. And on days like tomorrow, on windy, stormy days where the planes are crabbing in, coming in almost at a 45-degree angle to the runway, and then at the last second they stretch out, even out, you know, straighten out, you just think, this is what it does. And maybe if you live in Arlington Heights or Rosemont, someplace like that, you have more confidence in air travel because you've seen planes come and go in the worst of conditions, and they always make it. Everybody's fine. So it'll be okay is what I'm saying, but it just won't be any fun. Last couple of text messages about our last guest, John Becker from Miami of Ohio, who wrote about on Twitter controversial food tweets. And then people from the BBC are writing about this and the controversy it's generated. I mean, it's just kind of fun that, you know, news anchors, sports celebrities, movie stars, authors, everybody got into it, as well as average schmoes like you and me, just saying, hey, here's my hot take on food. Controversial food tweets. Retweet this with yours. So he throws that out there and he blows it up, right? And a lot of fun ones, you know, came. And then everybody started to get mad at everybody because that's what we do on Twitter. Literally, the BBC has a story about the charges of racism inherent in people who are putting down Indian food. And there's a lot of Indians in London and a very great, Indian culture and restaurants. The food is very big there. But you guys, he just said, tell me some fun. What do you not like? If I say I don't like Indian food, you cannot call me a racist about Indians. You do not get to have that one. Janet Elizabeth Childerhose, I presume that's her name, tweeted, Americans have the taste buds of toddlers. By and large, that's true. I know so many adults who are still eating, you know, chicken sticks. They saturate savory foods with sugar and hide their flavors. Candied walnuts and sweetened cranberries and salads. Sweetened sauces over meat. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I'm with that person. Wholeheartedly. I mean, doesn't she talk about ranch in that tweet, too?
Somebody else right adjacent to that said, you know, ranch dressing is stupid. Ranch dressing is awesome.
I hate it so much.
How can you hate ranch dressing? That's one of the few things that, given the opportunity to and the mood for indulgence, I will indulge in. Don't you like a chicken stick dipped in ranch?
Hell no. It tastes like sweat to me.
Huh. Kevin, are you on board? Are you paying attention to WGN Radio by any chance?
A little bit, yeah, as I'm getting ready for the show. I used to like ranch, and for something, I mean, I think I can work with it in a salad, but in terms of a condiment dipping, no go.
I'm embarrassed to say that I've dipped pizza into ranch before.
I know that's a thing, and not going there. Can't go there.
Like no. Bad pizza, though. Like
here's my problem. I like a celery stalk or a carrot stick all by itself. I would munch on that with anything. But then you put ranch dressing in front of it, and you go, I love carrot sticks. I will really love a carrot stick with ranch dressing. And now I've ruined all the goodness of my carrot stick, you know, because I'm dipping it in icing is what I'm doing.
I mean, for the most part, I understand with that the shot at American food, because some people are very picky. But, like, some of the best restaurants in the world, and there are a lot of them, are in America. It's not like we don't know fine cuisine. Kidding me? Come to Chicago.
Okay, here's some of the texts we got. Liver should be used as shoe sole. 630, avocados taste like dirt. Just plain gross. Hey, that gets to be their opinion. It's like when we do the bright side. If it's making you happy, we're not going to judge. But avocados are one of the greatest inventions of all time.
So good. This reminds me of this whole story. There was a local reporter here who was just, she's a sports reporter, and she was just having fun. She loves chicken wings, so she started asking for suggestions, and she said, okay, I'll make this an ongoing thing. I'll keep hitting all the great chicken wings throughout the Chicago area. And by the end of it, she's like, I'm done with this. I'm canceling this whole idea, because everyone started getting ruthless on Twitter and being like, that place stinks. No, you got to go here. How is this not on
your
list?
You're an idiot. What's the matter with you?
She was just trying to do a fun chicken wing thread review situation.
Got ugly.
You know what I used to do? I used to drink vinegar out of a glass with my sister.
Oh, boy.
Why?
Wow. There you go.
I love vinegar, though.
I used to eat butter as a kid.
What?
Sorry.
I've heard
reach in and grab a mount.
We've got a few people texting in, ranch tastes like my feet, and I agree. And
it does have that musty flavor, but in a wonderful way.
Oh, gross.
Sorry, everybody.
And ranch what else? Smells and tastes rancid, another person said. Yeah.
I put ketchup on my hot dogs all the time. People who don't only justify it by tradition. There's a hot take. Potato salad and coleslaw should be banned from picnics. Tomatoes are amazing, but tomato soup is gross, and Brussels sprouts are masterful.
Oh, my God, Brussels sprouts off the charts.
Brussels sprouts are the worst thing to happen to America in, I would say, the last 10 years.
Oh, I love them so much.
I was at for a hot one. I do not like the look, smell, feel of them.
Yeah.
Wow, mm-hmm. Brussels. In fact, mm-hmm. When people eat Brussels sprouts and brag about it, I think you're showing off. You do not like Brussels sprouts that much. You're just doing that to Jay.
I love Brussels sprouts mixed in with some bacon bits.
Ooh. Like roasted, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal.
They're not even listening to you, John.
And I'm the one that hates tomatoes, avocados, mushrooms. I can go on and on.
Yeah,
and
we
I'm
go
like
out.
The
Lauren's
worst.
The picky. We have to go through, like, when Ro's ordering for the table, we have to go, like, line by line. We have to detail every specific thing. And I'm like, just order anything and I'll eat whatever you put in front of me.
We are out of time. I said yesterday I wanted to go over the top Christmas movies of all time. We'll do that yet again tomorrow. Here comes Ro and Anna. Actually, Ro is in today. I think he's going to make it, right?
Yep, he's back.
Braveheart will be there.